The GP Plus Careers Podcast.
Are you a GP hoping to diversify your career? Perhaps you've got a passion for women's health or have ambitions to be an expedition GP. Or maybe you've just always wondered, what would it be like to be a GP working in a prison? Well, this will hopefully be the podcast for you. My name's Sophie Lumley. I'm a First Five GP in the West Midlands and also a training programme director. I certainly fell into the above category, and I was keen to start this podcast to find out about the breadth of career options available to me, my colleagues and my trainees. I've been lucky enough to interview fellow GPs who've had some of these extra roles. They've told me what their role involves, how they got there, and the tips and advice that they have for those hoping to follow in their footsteps. I really hope you enjoy listening and feel as inspired as I have in speaking to them. I'm really pleased today to be joined by Mel, LFTC, who is a GP working in an urgent care setting. So over to you, May. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do?
I'm a GP in mainly working clinically at an urgent care centre in Coventry. My job is part of a hospital consultant job. So the full title is a consultant integrated and community care. I work less than full time clinically as a GP in the urgent treatment centre. That urgent treatment centre is in a very deprived area, so we have other work. So I supervise the social prescribers, do some community work with it, trying to make the urgent treatment centre part of the community and linking with other GPs.
So it sounds like a sort of urgent care setting, but also it's got some helpful sort of multidisciplinary team members attached to it. Just for those who haven't worked in urgent care before and are sort of used to doing normal and inverted commas GP, what's the sort of difference in the patient cohort that you're seeing or the presentations that you're seeing compared to normal GP?
We have two urgent treatment centre. One is linked to A&E, so part of A&E minor injury unit, and one is at the City of Coventry Health Centre. It's at the City Centre of Coventry. I would say it's quite deprived and quite diverse area with a catchment area for a larger area. So the whole Coventry, we can see some of our patients outside Coventry. So they are usually walk-in patients with minor illnesses, we call it. So you could see anything from like coughs and cold, hay fever at the moment, to like wheezy episode. We had a thunderstorm asthma thingy going on in the last few weeks. There's a lot of wheezy people, even without any history of asthma. So things like this, it can with variations. So some of the chest pain that might be musculoskeletal, but some of it that needs transferring to the hospital. So yeah, we see the variety of patients and differentiated patients, but walk in.
So the patients are walking in rather than having a booked appointment. They're covering a much larger area by the sounds of things. So you've got a mixed demographic rather than a specific practice population. And then you're seeing things that the patient considers to be urgent on the day. Is that right?
Yes. There are some booked appointments from 111. So that these are the booked appointment, but the rest of it is walk-in patients.
Just thinking, for example, the one that's attached to the A&E, who and how is it decided whether they're going to see someone who's a GP or someone who's an A&E doctor?
So, good question, because I was talking initially earlier about the urgent treatment centre at the City of Coventry Health Centre, where walk-in. For our urgent treatment centre at the minor injury unit, there is a streamer at A&E front door that will stream patients to those who go to A&E or those who go to us at the urgent treatment centre. So there will be a streamer whose job is to find, yeah. So sometimes we will see the patients that are minor illnesses, but some of them might need referral back to other specialties. So
it's people who may think that they need A&E, but actually would be better off seeing a GP.
Yes.
And from what you're saying, it sounds like you don't have your own practice list. So you've not got patients that you're necessarily going to follow up. These are sort of acute on the day walk-in service patients.
Yeah, so the job is to see them, sort the problem for today, but yeah, no practice list.
So that's quite different from normal GP, but it sounds like some of the presentations might be quite similar to what you might be seeing as duty doctor, or if you're the sort of have a role for urgent care within your practice, the sort of chest pains, the coughs and colds, the patient presentation seems to be a little bit similar to what you might see in general practice, but with that sort of degree of urgency and the fact that the patient feels it's more urgent than their GP can manage.
It makes it more exciting, as well as like you miss that continuity of care in general practice. But at the same time, that access provided. What brought me to this and what got me into urgent care was health inequality and tackling health inequality. And some of our patients from certain background or certain deprivation score, like they wouldn't attend that appointment sometimes. And sometimes I feel we are the provider of their appointment, especially, I mean, at the moment we have a newly migrant hotel that we newly arriving people for that migrant hotel, and all of them are coming. They don't understand the NHS. They don't understand how it works. That need is met through coming to us, and then for us, we're having the social prescribers as well as our team to see them for that main problem. But I think they need that continuity of care, and how can we direct them there?
That's really interesting. So it sounds like you're sort of helping the A&E side of things by receiving triaged urgent care patients that can be managed by GPs, but also actually you're able to feed back into the GP system with the right advice and guidance and linking people up with the right sort of services in the community. So that's a really interesting model that you've got social prescribers, and that you're picking up these patient cohorts who don't necessarily know how to utilise GP in the UK to their best ability. So that's a really helpful, interesting service that you've got going locally.
Exactly. So there is that request for investigations, referrals, the document part of it, I don't have. Okay, so it makes me like, I'll start with my shift. When I finish my shift, there is no patient that is at the back of my head, or there's no like blood results or document letters that I'm going to think about. But at the same time, it's all about, okay, we've seen a lot of patients from that particular hotel. How can we manage this, and how can we support the patients? And I think that's why I like the title of my job, like the consultant community and integrated care. It's all about, like, we're now in conversation with the council, with the migrant team at that hotel, just to make sure that we start there at the hotel and just make sure that all of these patients' registration at their GP is right. They understand the NHS. Our social prescribers are going and giving lectures about how the NHS work, connecting with the translator, just all things that social prescribers are better than us in doing. But I'm hoping that will make it easier for us and for the local GP service surgeries as well. I might be diverting from the urgent care that people are looking for, but I think I'm tackling some of our patients that need our help because they don't access healthcare in the same way that we. So we talked about migrant and they don't understand it, but we've got the homeless, we've got the patients who can't keep an appointment with a chaotic lifestyle where they wouldn't keep. And it just, yeah, us there trying to get them
fed back into the GP system in the
absolutely
right way.
Absolutely. And sometimes with a trauma-informed care, and get that trust back in the system and get them there. So that's, I think, part of my job. Although, yeah, I am an urgent care GP, but I still have got a GP at heart. Like, yeah, that continued curtis and all is important.
So you've applied your GP problem solving and community care to a wider audience and wider practice population. So I think that sounds like a really interesting role. Can you tell us a little bit more about your working week then? So you mentioned two different sites for urgent care and that you're principally an urgent care doctor. How does your week work, and how do all your roles sort of fit together?
I work Monday to Wednesdays are my normal urgent care days, and then it's a hospital consultant contract, so I have an SPA time. Okay, so that's and that day I have two trainees who are GP plus trainees, so they attend one day a week with us to just learn about urgent care and be confident when they finish. Hopefully they will be part of our team at one point. And then I've got Thursdays is my TBD day, so training program director day, and then Fridays is my equality, diversity and inclusion lead and freedom to speak up guardian role as well. With that comes the weekend. Every 6 weekends normally is the is what I do as well. Yeah, so that's something I didn't do in general practice, doing weekends. So I know every fourth weekend or every sixth weekend I'll have to be at the urgent treatment centre.
Well, and I suppose that's an important thing for urgent work in general, or working with urgent care centres, is that often there's an element of out of hours because these patients present to A&Es and other centres throughout the day. Are both your urgent care settings open 24/7?
So our centres are open from 8 till 10. Both of them. So we're not providing 24 hours, but we have some out of hours, so that 8 till 10 o'clock, the part at 10 o'clock is the out of hours.
And it sounds like you have a very full week. That's a lot of days, 5 days a week, and 1 in 4 or 1 in 6 weekends as well. So I don't know how you have time for anything else. But it sounds like you've got a nice balance of different roles of more sort of strategic and educational side, an urgent care GP clinical role. And then you've got some other interesting roles as in equality and diversity training, which I would love to hear about another time. But I'm going to restrain myself and keep myself to the urgent care side of things. It sounds like it's something that you're really passionate about and clearly quite experienced if you're now supervising and training up other GP plus clinicians. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey into working as an urgent care doctor?
I am in a different stage of life than, for example, those who are starting a family or starting their career. So you just don't feel pressurized to just like, I need to have it all. I think for me, it provides a lot of diversity in the week, makes the week a bit like I'm going from my GP role to TBD role to, and it, but you don't have to do it all. And you just, there's nothing wrong with sticking to one thing and doing the minimum, especially when the kids are growing. I've mentioned before that I've got grown up kids at the moment. So I think I got used to running after the kids and now they're like grown up. They don't need me anymore. I need to fill my time with something else. And I'm like, I think I'm parenting everyone with my EDI role and freedom to speak up and TBD role. So that might be that trying to fill in a gap. So there is no pressure. It's just because sometimes it feels a bit, I don't know. I just wanted to clarify this.
There's a temptation, isn't there? If people find out you're a GP and you do it for a few years and you think, oh, this is great, but I want to do something extra. And then once you're doing something, it's often a pathway to doing other bits because people hear that you're an enthusiast. And it's very easy if you're a yes person to jump on all these sorts of opportunities. But actually, you've got to make the balance work for you. Really, really salient advice there to say, you know, you don't need to start doing it all in one go, but do the bits that work for you.
Yeah, the most important thing is look after yourself and well-being. If you can do it, fine. If you can't do it, no is a full sentence. Just like, yeah, look after yourself. That's, you can't give it from an empty tank. And you just like keep saying yes, yes, and then you find yourself can't do it all. So I don't advise to overbook yourself.
I think that's a great sentence. I love that. No is a full sentence. I'm going to remember that one. So tell us about yourself then. So you're saying you've got grown-up kids now and you've obviously got these extra roles now, but how did you start out in urgent care? How did you build that sort of portfolio for yourself?
I'm a middle five GP at the moment, but when I started at urgent care, I think what brought me to it is my interest in health inequality. I mean, I was doing my GP training in a very, very affluent area, easy patient. I know. I thought I'm gonna either do a salary job here, or a locum here. And then I ended at my last ST3 job was at a surgery in a very deprived area, and I felt like this is home. I'm not sure if you've done your, 16 personality thingy, and I'm an INFJ, I'm an advocate. And I felt like this is where I belong. This is where I want to work all the time. So I did some work there. And then when I finished my training, I did my Trailblazer Fellowship, a health inequality fellowship. And that's a year in a very deprived area again, but with a lot of involvement in other health inequality quality improvement projects. From there, this job came. Just before that, I got my EDI role as well, the Equality, Diversity and Inclusion Lead job. And I was thinking about how can we make it easier for people to raise concerns. If I'm going to do the Freedom to Speak Up Guardian, I don't want to feel like I am working for one of the surgeries locally. So when this job came from the hospital, I thought I'll go for it. It's an urgent care, so part of why I liked it. And then the fact that you come and you go and it's just that you see the patients at the beginning and you when you're finished, there is no document, there is no other commitment that comes. And the variety of patients, the fact that I'm seeing those patients from those communities that I can help and I can connect, and with my roles with health inequality, I can think of other projects that we can help them, is what made me want to do this job.
So that's really interesting that that's where you came to it. So it sounds like it was that the patient population was really attractive to you. The sort of come do your job and leave and not necessarily have all the accumulated admin that goes with having your own list. And that also there was something to be said for not necessarily being linked to any of the practices that you were acting as the freedom to speak up guardian for. So actually not having a practice allegiance can have its benefits as well. Had you done, you know, a lot of A&E or urgent care work before? Because it sounds like, you know, you saw this job come up and you thought, yeah, I can be an urgent care doctor. But I think some people would be intimidated thinking, well, ooh, do I know enough urgent care, you know, have enough urgent care experience to do that?
Since finishing my training until I started this job, I did a few out of hours and urgent treatment center jobs. So I did some locum shifts in that in the same center for 2 years before I started this job. And I think, yeah, it can be quite intimidating when you start. Before I did general practice, I was an ENT researcher. I think this is not related, but related. It just can cover, gives you the confidence with airways, give you the confidence with all the ENT emergencies. But I didn't do anything throughout my GP training, if that reassured people about the urgent care. I did the hours that we were supposed to do for our urgent care hours that we needed for our portfolio, but nothing else. But then I did some shifts in the urgent treatment center itself before I started the job. So I know the place, I know the people, I know that I can do this job when I applied for it.
So that's great to know. So actually you didn't necessarily have any specific training in urgent care. You were trained as a GP, had done a the right amount of sort of urgent out of hours work, but actually felt comfortable saying, right, yep, it's an advertised role as a GP, I'm going to give it a go. Were there other GPs working in the center or consultants sort of attached to the center who you could ask for advice if that was something that you were getting into for the first time or didn't really know much about before?
This was a job that is created for the four of us that we not created, but we applied for it, the four consultants, GPs that were doing other stuff, that were GPs somewhere else, and then we started being the GP. So there was no one else is doing the same job that we're doing. This was an urgent treatment center before it was taken by the hospital, but the trust that we're working for. So it was run by another service, but it was mainly locum workforce. There was no salaried or doctor that we could have asked how it worked. So we started from scratch. We started from few things that were there initially. But what I'm trying to say here is that if you like, you can try it. You can try it like for a locum shift and thing, but doesn't mean that you really need to have some experience to start something like this. It's, as you mentioned earlier, it's the same things that we see in general practice. With sometimes, especially when I work in the one attached to the hospital, with the added bonus of like you can go upstairs for the rest of it. It's like I'm actually safer, because if you're in a general practice and have that emergency, calling the ambulance will say you're in a safe place. But I am. I'm actually there are the workforce that can help you in terms of in case things get
dicey.
Yes.
Dicey. It's everyone's sort of palpitation inducing moment, isn't it? With someone who really shouldn't be sat in a general practice waiting room and should have gone to A&E in the first place, and then you're trying to remember your BLS and what's in the ALS bag. So you're in the right place for it, which sounds like an added benefit.
Yes.
It sounds like you've answered my next question, that, you know, you don't necessarily need any specific requirements or training or diplomas to be interested in urgent care. You can try it out by locuming at your urgent care centre and then see whether there's any more, you know, permanent or salaried roles that you could get involved in if you wanted to do it more often.
Yes, absolutely. So at the moment, I have two GP plus trainees who like work normally in a general practice and then come and visit us. And I feel that this is the perfect opportunity to try it and see how it works for them, if they like it or not, because for some people it won't be the right thing for them. But then if you haven't done it through training, you can just go and do some locums or shadowing. They will always need for some workforce to help us there throughout the year. In terms of diplomas, there will always be something that you can do that just to give you that confidence in managing emergencies. The hospital offered some of those courses and things. There was recently something on the RCGP on the emergencies as well. So Tim Sanders was one of so he did recently a 1 day essentials in urgent care. There are diplomas. There is diploma. There is the diploma in urgent care from the Royal College of Surgeons in Edinburgh. Okay, this is something that I haven't done. I would like to do myself, but what I'm saying is there are people who like to to see if it's good for them. And I think it's very important to do some shifts there or shadow. More than welcome to contact me and shadow me if you're local. But then that diploma is not a requirement. You can go for urgent care if you feel like you can do it and it's something that you're interested in without the diploma. Courses, there's always be courses. Look at the RCGP website, I think, the learning page, and you'll find something that makes me more comfortable.
I think that's, again, really salient advice, is that this is a role that GPs can do based on the fact that they've done GP training and they're a competent GP. But actually, there are things out there that if you wanted specific skills in a certain area, there's obviously courses on it. There's a great RCGP One Day Essentials that will be available on the website. And that actually, you know, if you want to build up skills or confidence, there are things there, but you don't necessarily need them. And I think hopefully that message will really come through there, that, you know, if it's something that you feel that would fit with your life, that then give it a go and see how you feel.
Yeah, for me, I don't see a lot of patients that are different from my day-to-day general practice. Okay, so we see so I think what I see is every general practitioner can manage, and we'll do the same, we'll escalate if it's outside your remit of normal general practice urgent care.
And you've talked a little bit already about some of the benefits for you, but are there any other sort of general benefits you think there are of working in urgent care?
From conversation with colleagues, there are two types of people. There are people who thrive on those unselected urgent care cases, and there are people who are like, oh, this is not for me. And if you feel like you're the one who is, because it's all about finding the job that feels like it's your hobby at the same time. So when you go to work, it's not work. It's like, yeah, you finish your shift and you feel like, oh, I've done this job today, and I think that is for me what urgent care is. I finished my shift. I honestly yesterday finished, and I felt so fulfilled. I mean, it's all about problem solving, and all of them either refer or sort, or I'm afraid, or if it's chronic condition, it need to be sent to GP or Specsaver or whatever. I mean, yesterday I saw a young gloves lady. I'm like, I can't do anything with your gloves. The question is what the benefit, isn't it? So that is that's the greatest benefit of it. Then it comes to it's a good specialist interest if you're interested in that. And it just, yeah, so that's the other thing. With the difficulty in access and general practice, especially for me as again, health inequality and everything, I feel like I'm helping a lot of people, especially with what we started is that social prescriber role in urgent care. I feel like, again, this is fulfilling. I feel like I'm helping patients I'm still a GP. I'm still the one that doing that holistic care without being the GP in general practice. I mentioned the hours, like you go in at 8 o'clock when your shift starts at 8 o'clock, and it's at 4 o'clock sometimes. I'm like, oh yeah, you leave. There is no patients waiting because this is a shift work. The others starting their shift after you will finish and take over. At that time when I started 4 years ago, that was one of the other deciding factors as well, because it's very difficult to finish on time in general practice. And if they come with a lot of problems, it's just like, if you want to do it and feel fulfilled and feel, it's always comes with leaving late. I only leave late when I want to leave late, not because I have to leave late with this job, because other people are seeing the other patients. So I'm not, and we close at 10, so we closed at 10. So that's it. So that's a good benefit. I feel, yeah, we are, there's a lot of multitasking in general practice. I still remember having to just the inbox with Docman and results and things like this. I don't do that, which is again, very helpful. I think I do miss general practice, I have to say. I've been trained to be a general practitioner, but this offered me the perfect work-life balance and the job satisfaction that I was looking for, like with general practice. I can solve these problems. I still can have that holistic approach in a different way. I should talk about the benefit, because I was going to say continuity of care. Although some of our UTC population, I still put the community of care through other ways. So yeah, so these are the benefits that I can think of.
Are there any downsides, do you think, of working in urgent care as opposed to sort of normal general practice?
It's that continuity of care. It's that knowing your patients. It's that, like, you know, the cradle to grave part of the story. That's I feel like I don't get it. Although patients are very grateful, because I think access is different at the moment. I don't know if that's true, or is that because they want to just walk in? That's a different story. Okay. Patients are grateful, but I don't get that continuity of care, that relationship with your I'm not their GP, I'm that urgent care GP. That's the only downside at the moment. I can't think of any other side. I've got the training part. I train GPs. I can't have my own trainees because we don't have that practice list at the moment. So that's what we're told. But apart from that, I have that GP plus trainees. I've got the variety.
What you're selling it as is it's general practice, but you leave on time and you don't necessarily have to follow patients up. So there's the benefits and downsides that come with that different model of care.
Exactly. Yeah. So, for example, I don't manage HRT. I don't manage menopause or HRT as such, like in terms of, so some of the clinical condition, that might be a downside, because if you're going to decide to go to urgent care, you will know that some of the chronic healthcare condition management, you might de-skill yourself in them, and it's either keeping a balanced approach, doing some shifts outside, or I feel like my TBD job keeps me updated with all the others with the other clinical conditions, because I have to advise trainees, we have to have teaching and things like this, so that's a different that's for me different. But yeah, so that's might be a downside, that people can need to make sure that they have continuing professional development through other ways if they're not decided yet about just all the time urgent treatment centre approach.
I think that's really valuable, actually, to think, yeah, that there might be additional things that you're seeing in urgent care that you might see less of in general practice, but actually there's some stuff that you see in sort of normal practice, general practice, that that you might not see as much of in urgent care. And I suppose, like you say, that some might see that as a benefit, I think.
Exactly.
It's not seeing lots of HRT consultations, but I suppose if you want to dip in and out of both, and like you say, keeping your CPD up to date is really key. So I'm sure there'll be some people sitting there listening to you thinking, oh, you know what, I really think that appeals. I like seeing that the sort of duty day kind of general practice presentations, the urgent stuff, and having the idea that you might leave on time is very appealing. So what advice do you have for those thinking, right, I'd like to get into this, where shall I start?
At the moment, if you're CCT, then you're looking for a job, it's doing some locum shifts so you know what it is like. You're more than welcome to come and shadow, because for some people, they might find it a bit difficult. I know some colleagues was like, I can't do it, because they think I'm like, we're not in majors, basically. We're not in majors. So what you see is appropriate. And if it's not appropriate, you can escalate. So just by shadowing, they realize that this is doable. This is what I do every day, and that's what convinced me to do. So don't just put it, if you're not sure about it, just don't put it off. Just come and shadow one of us or do a locum shift, see if it works for you. But then and then the next is finding jobs, and you always find jobs through the RCGP website, through like the trust, for us it's the trust and NHS jobs website.
So I think that's really helpful. Just get stuck in, I suppose, and do some shifts and see whether it's for you. For those who are really thinking, oh, well, actually, urgent care really sounds like it might be my thing, and want to do a bit more of it like you do as your sort of main clinical interest, do you know of any sort of networks or sort of groups that people might want to get involved in, things like that?
We have our own specialist interest group, urgent care specialist interest group at the RCGP, so Royal College of General Practitioners. If you go to a specialist interest group, you will find our urgent care group. So please feel free to join us. We try to discuss things that are relevant to us, triage, how can we make you safe, and what are the things that we face as doctors in urgent care, and we're trying to make sure that we are, as well as doctors and GPs in urgent care, are part of the diversity of being a GP can be, isn't it? So yeah, it doesn't have to be salaried locum and general practice or partner in a practice. You could be also an urgent care GP. So yeah, please join us at the urgent care seg.
No, that's great. We can certainly provide the link to that as well for those who might be interested in it. And I'm sure they can find you at conference and things like that and find the enthusiasts, find their tribe. Is there sort of specific information that you can get from the special interest group, or is it more joining the group and hearing about discussions and what kind of events might be going on?
Yeah, so this is a relatively new SEG group. Okay, so our specialist interest group in urgent care has, I think, just over a year. So we're still finding our feet, and people who join us now will be the ones who form this group. I think the one who wants to explore being an urgent care GP is will find the mentoring, will find the support, how to start, because there's a group of very experienced GPs who've done it for a long time and who's established GPs in urgent care. But there's also the way we want to make it as part of a specialist interest group and extended role. So people who have done it for some time and would like to share their experience, share their work with us, and form or be part of how it looks to be a GP in urgent care, because I am an urgent care. I'm an urgent care GP in an urban area, focus on health inequality and deprivation. But people like Tim Sanders is rural GP with a different form of urgent care. So we come in different forms, and it's very important to have more of us join in. There are people who do out of hours. There are people who do the urgent treatment centre. There are people who are GP in A&Es. We want all of them to join together. And with that, we can form something that is what it is to be an urgent treatment centre GP or urgent care GP.
Sounds like a really exciting time to get involved, actually, when it's kind of not completely in its infancy. So there's some really experienced people already discussing things and involved, but actually an opportunity to shape what urgent care with GPs working in it looks like in the future. And like you've insinuated there, there's, I suppose, different types of urgent care settings that you might be very closely linked to A&E. You might be more of a community setting. You might be more urban. You might be more rural. So I suppose actually linking up with your local centre and finding out what kind of urgent care works for you, because I suppose the urban areas might have more of the deprivation and the demand, but actually then you're also got the access to the specialist services nearby, whereas if you're rural you might have less of that, but you're also dealing with things for longer before you can transfer them out to an A&E department or hospital.
Exactly, and that's why it's very important to know where you're going for, and then and have that training before you go and say, yeah, I can do that. Especially with the rural one, you just need to have some competency to do other stuff while waiting for ambulances or air ambulance or something to help you there.
And I suppose for those who are linked with more or working in more rural settings or living in more rural settings, and actually, again, linking up with your urgent care doctors and finding out what that training might be useful to have if you're, you know, in the, 2 hours away in mid Wales, for example, exactly. Away from an urgent care centre might be a different sort of remit of skills. So thank you so much for your sharing your story and your advice today, May. It's been really insightful and I think really helpful for people to understand exactly what your job looks like where you are, but also how it could look different and fit with other people's working week. We're asking everybody to end with positivity, and I'd wonder whether you could share what is your highlight or what's your real best moment of working as an urgent care GP.
I mean, I've been doing it for 4 years now, and the fact that I came out yesterday, I mean, this is like and I felt fulfilled. I felt everyone was happy with the care that they provided. I felt like I saved lives. I made people better is my highlight. And I was just like, that's why I want to be a GP. That's why I want to continue to be here working in urgent care. So that's I think that's my positivity. It's just like everyday fulfillment and we're making a difference. We should be proud of who we are as GPs.
Oh, fantastic. What a lovely note to end on. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
We hope that this careers podcast has motivated and inspired you to explore the variety of career options available as a GP. Speak to your appraiser, your local training programme directors, or perhaps join our RCGP mentoring programme for further support to diversify your career. Thanks for listening and good luck.
The GP Plus Careers Podcast.